Do they have an innocence project at the Boyd?
They did, but I don't think they do. Jonell would know.
Could we start it again, you and me? And
yeah, sure.
And get a case and really get some Karen's cases.
Oh, there'd be plenty to go around. There aren't any innocent people in prison in Nevada. Define innocence.
Jamie, you ready, kiddo?
I am ready to more.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to call the meeting of the Indigent Defense Commission to order. I'm going to ask Jamie to call the roll.
Okay. Justice Cherry.
Present.
Justice Seda. Justice Diglett. Judge Armstrong. Bob Bell. Jeremy Bosler.
Here.
Thank you. David Carroll.
Here.
Thank you. Alex Cherup. Drew Christensen. Joni Easley.
Yep.
Judge Fairman. Franny Forsman. Judge Herndon. Christopher Hicks.
Here.
Thank you. Judge Higgins. Kristen Hill. Dana Levac. Judge Kaysen. Phil Cohn.
Here.
Thank you. Michael Kagan. Karen Kresenbeck.
Present.
Thank you. Chris Lawley. John Lambros.
Yes.
John McCormick.
Yes.
Judge Montero.
Yes, I'm here by phone.
Thank you. Mark Picker.
Here.
Thank you. Rochelle Resnick. Amy Rose. Diane Roth. Sean Rowe. Judge Schlegelmilch.
Yep, I'm here.
Thank you. Judge Shirley. Judge Simons. John Slaughter. Dagny Stapleton.
Here.
Jonelle Thomas.
Here.
Judge Wonker. Jeff Wells.
Here.
Judge Young.
Here.
We barely have a quorum.
Okay, thank you, Jamie.
Hi, it's Kevin Higgins.
Thank you, Judge.
Now we definitely have a quorum. Public comment, because of time considerations, the period for public comment by each speaker may be limited. Speakers are urged to avoid repetition of comments already made by previous speakers. Is there anybody in either any of the jurisdictions who would like to do public comment?
I just have a comment for Jamie.
Sure.
Judge Wonker sends her regrets that she couldn't be here. Her parents are celebrating their 60th wedding anniversary, and she's on her way to Nebraska.
Okay.
Sounds good to me. I need a motion to...
Public comment in Reno.
Yes.
No public comment in Reno.
Okay, thank you. Is there a motion to approve the June 6th meeting summary that was prepared by a good person, Grant, Jamie?
I'll move to approve it if we put me down as having attended. This is Kevin Higgins.
All right, it's amended to show that the Justice of the Peace from Sparks, Kevin Higgins, is attended, and he's here today also. And is there a second?
I'll second.
It's been seconded. All those in favor signify saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Hearing none, it's approved. And now we have David Carroll on the phone. Tomorrow we have a Right to Counsel Commission meeting at the legislature, both in Carson City and in the Grant Sawyer building in Las Vegas. And David will be giving a report then on the progress of him being handling this matter as a consultant. So, David, where do we stand on all this?
As I reported at the last Right to Counsel Commission meeting, the Sixth Amendment Center has completed all of our site work and are busy trying to get all this down into a report. The problem right now is it's too massive a report. We've gotten a lot of great information and a lot of cooperation from lots of different players from all across the state. We have conducted more than 150 formal interviews, and those are actually sitting down either in person or on the phone. We've had far more communications with lots of people beyond that, including a lot of the court administrators that did a lot of great work to get us information on experts and expert witnesses and investigator costs and things like that, where literally people were going through files by hand, getting us some of the information we were looking for. But the bottom line is that the state of Nevada, as do all states, have a 14th Amendment obligation to ensure that the right to counsel is being effectively implemented. And though the U.S. Supreme Court has never stated whether it's constitutional to pass off their obligation onto the counties, what we do know is that if a state chooses to do that, they still have to ensure that it's being done correctly. And the main takeaway we've had is that the state has absolutely no infrastructure to be able to tell whether and what is going on out in the various counties and cities that have municipal courts. What we've done in going around to virtually all of the counties is that we've found that there's good and bad out there. One of the things we really emphasized at the last meeting was that the debate over the delivery model and whether a state public defender model is the best model is one that we think is misguided. For the most part, counties have landed on indigent defense delivery systems that meet the unique differences of each of their counties. So what works in Humboldt won't work in Lander, what works in Elko won't work in Mineral, what works in Lyon won't work in Pershing. That doesn't mean that there aren't problems, and I want to be clear about this because I've had a number of conversations after that last commission meeting where some people thought I was saying there were no issues. And what I tried to show was even in a county like Humboldt that has more institutional safeguards against some of the problems we expected to see, and I think handles representation fairly well, there were still some major problems going on there, including excessive caseload and prosecutors meeting with uncounseled defendants to arrange plea deals prior to justice court. Those are just two of the things in one of the better off systems. Tomorrow we plan on presenting more of the problem areas. I feel like I owe it to that commission to present those issues first. But I want to say clearly that the people in rural Nevada that we've met with very much care about the right to counsel, value the right to counsel, and want to do it well. The fact that there are some issues, and serious issues at that, does not mean that they are purposefully trying to do this. In fact, to a person, most of the interviewers told us if we're doing something wrong, we want to know about it and fix it. And towards that goal, I think there's a developing, burgeoning place of consensus that might be able to be met, that if the local choice for how systems are constructed is left locally, I think a lot of the rural people see value in a state partnership. So for instance, we were talking to county managers and we said, you know, wouldn't it be great if you knew where all the people you're contracting with work, because there's people that hold contracts for a justice and district court that may also have work in municipal courts in the urban area, or maybe doing juvenile work in a different county, those type of things, so that they had the information. The only way to do that is to have some state agency responsible for coordinating all that information. Similarly, the state could train and qualify attorneys so that county managers would know, okay, here's the group of attorneys that you may want to contract with. Those type of things are what people are starting to sort of see. We've seen that there's very little use of investigators and expert witnesses in the rural jurisdiction. That has nothing to do with judicial interference. I think it's been clear to us that anybody that asks for one of those things, it's approved because the judges don't want to be seen as interfering in that. But that doesn't mean that the attorneys understand the value of investigators and how to use expert witnesses, and that could be part of the training. And perhaps the central state agency could also be the one approving the use of experts and investigators. So a public defender would, you know, still put forward a proposal for what they want and what it would cost, and the state would be able to evaluate it in a way that a judge couldn't. Those are just some of the ideas, and we're not wed to all of them, but I do want to talk a little bit about one idea that's getting a little traction, and that's sort of what we're calling the Michigan model. There's a state commission that sets and promulgates standards, and then there's a central office that the counties and cities submit proposals to about what it would take for them to meet that standard. And if it's approved, then the state pays the difference between what they're currently paying and what it would cost to meet those standards. So for instance, if there's a standard that says, you know, attorneys need to be present at the initial hearing, there's several counties where that would need to increase the number of attorneys that are being used there. They could calculate what that would cost, put a plan forward, and if it's met, the state would pick up the difference. Now, obviously, Michigan is a much larger state than your state is, but in the first year of that, the state, for the first time ever, put the in-state monies, and they ponied up $85 million, which is about double what the counties were currently spending. I'm not saying this is an idea I'm wed to, but I think it's one in which you can sort of see how hybrid partnerships between the state and county on this can produce good things, because counties can get some relief, but also maintain the local control that they so desire, so that they know what system would work best for them. I think that's a good idea. I think we'll be talking more about it tomorrow. But one of the things for this IBC is that any past attempts to get uniform caseflow data is not working. Even within the same counties, attorneys are counting differently. Some are counting charges, some are counting defendants. Oftentimes, if it's a 2 or 3 person law firm under contract, they're just saying how many defendants the firm is defending, and we don't know if that means one of the lawyers handling all of the cases or the 3 lawyers are splitting the cases evenly. There's lots of problems, and so someone, whether it's a new commission, whether it's the Right to Counsel Commission, whether it's the IDC, really does need to get back to creating standards for how to report caseload, because it's not working right now. What we have been able to glean from the counties that do have decent data is that for the most part, there's still too many cases. It's not wildly over in some counties, it is in others. And we're not saying that the attorneys handling these caseloads are bad attorneys. It's just like anywhere, there's some good attorneys and some bad attorneys. So we think ultimately the best way to do this is to get it all down on paper. It's been our only focus in the past several weeks. We're getting close. But we just want to say that, you know, we really enjoyed our time out in the field. We met a lot of great people, and I do think there's room for a consensus here in a type of hybrid system that respects local differences, but also gives state support to the counties as well. So that's my summation for where we are.
David, it's Justice Cherry. I'm assuming, though, that definitely there'll be a recommendation that there be an independent Indigent Defense Commission, so that the Supreme Court can let go of this issue and handle cases that would come directly be that would come from issues that are raised with the commission and the commission working
yes.
with the state and with the counties.
I am definitely prepared to make that recommendation. I think the court should be out of it for some of the same perceptions of judicial interference. And all national standards call for such a commission with the power to promulgate standards. So yes, you can be assured that that will be part of the recommendation.
Are there any questions to David from Las Vegas? How about Reno? How about on the phone? Anybody on the phone have a question for our consultant, David Carroll? John Lambros, you have a question here in Carson.
Hi, David. Yeah, just a quick one. Again, just to recap for those of you who may not remember this, and I apologize for being redundant because I said this in the last meeting. The original SB 377 that was presented as a BDR in January of 2017 was substantially modified. I shouldn't say substantially, but certainly modified to the extent that it was much more palatable to a lot of the important players in the rural counties, chief of whom were several rural county judges, and prominently involved in that was Judge Schmegelmilch. So by the end of that process, we had the SB 377 that was voted out of Senator Sagerblum's committee and sent on to the Finance Committee. My point is, before that happened, my recollection is the Indigent Defense Commission unanimously endorsed and approved the modified BDR. In other words, the BDR that was amended after the several discussions that David and I and John McCormick had with the rural judges that I mentioned earlier. John McCormick just handed me a note saying 377 first reprint. That's what I'm talking about right now. My point is, what I'm interested in finding out, David, is if there's some kind of pushback to the first amended 377, I'd be curious about what it is, because frankly, by the time we got voted out of Senate Judiciary, the only political player that I recall being opposed to the bill was the District Attorneys Association. And I'm sorry, John.
Oh, no, I was going to agree with you that I think the DAs were still had an issue. And I think there was still concern from some of the rural counties because they're, shall we say, a bit gun-shy at this point in terms of, because the first reprint said you would never pay more for indigent defense than
right.
you paid in the average of that. And I think there was still concern there that just because the bill said it didn't mean the legislature would follow it going forward.
I agree with that. But assuming, for the sake of discussion, that the bill that we wrote and the first reprint that went to finance that got turned into this study committee, assuming that became law and the counties were going to know that they were never going to spend any more than what was in that, and that was as a matter of law, I'm curious as to who, because believe me, I lived through this over the last 3 years. I went, as Joni would testify to, I went to two state NACO conventions. I went to a bunch of NACO board meetings. I went to every county in this state, and I talked to all of the players except for the DAs, and they were like thrilled because what they were getting was the possible assurance that they wouldn't have to spend any more county dollars on indigent defense in exchange for, and again, this was after some significant giving and taking, but with the judges, in exchange for, and I hate to use the word surrendering, but in exchange for going to this model where we have a statewide commission that oversees the appointment, selection process, and approval of the delivery of indigent defense systems throughout the rural counties of Nevada. Not, when I say rural counties, I agree with what David said in his presentation to the Nevada Right to Counsel Commission that, you know, all rural counties are not the same. But I'm talking about the counties other than Washoe and Clark, okay? So my curiosity is, I'd like to know who these folks are and what their argument is. Because really,
sure.
I'm at a loss to try to figure it out by just conjuring it up in my imagination. I can't, you know, it's not that I'm a great advocate, because I don't think I am. But I've got, if you've got a good argument, it's kind of hard to lose with a good argument. And the players I know on this commission were unanimously in support of the first reprint. And we have a lot of people who come to the table with a lot of different perspectives. So who's complaining here?
Before David speaks, Dagny, Dave, hold on for a second. Dagny would like to make a couple points here from NACO.
I just want to echo what John said. I think thrilled might be a little bit of an exaggeration. There are those that I think understand it and were, but there were also those I think swayed by different players that were not thrilled. They were sort of mediocre on it, and that was based on their feeling that they needed a little more assurance on the piece, on the funding piece. And I don't know if that means a change in the language or whatever, but I guess in my mind, you know, depending on how different the proposal is, there's no harm in, you know, re-spinning it and, you know.
I'm totally in agreement with that. My assumption for the point, that the sake of what I'm saying and what I'm asking David is, Dagny, that we can assume for the sake of this discussion as a given that NACO would be assured that the law would read you would never have to spend any more dollars than you spent pursuant to the BDR that we, the first reprint, which was the average of two or three fiscal years, I believe.
Three, if I recall.
Yeah, and that would be the law, and that you couldn't, the state, without amending the law in a subsequent legislative session, which we couldn't, you know, you can't foresee them doing or not doing. And if NACO's concerned about that, I totally
understand. John, not to interrupt you, I'm sorry, this is Todd Young.
Sorry, Jeff, go ahead.
That's exactly the fear. And you passed over that when you went over this the first time. But I think that's exactly the fear that I heard several times. You know, a law is just a law, and it's only as good as the legislature that's sitting there this time around.
You're absolutely right, Judge. And you know,
and so that was a huge part of the fear.
Okay.
And I
can do is agree with that, because we can never predict what the next legislative session is going to do. You know, I totally agree with that.
David, you ready to comment?
Sure. So there were several people I met with who said, you know, we were against Senate Bill 377, and everyone knows it's easier to kill legislation than pass legislation. And the fear is exactly what we're hearing here, is, you know, the history with the state on this issue is not a good one. That either there's some people that still felt like the state public defender model was going to be pushed through with this commission. Some people felt even if they were able to maintain the local control, the state wouldn't uphold the financial end. It would all fall back to them anyways. And then there's some people that just, you know, don't want any sort of oversight. And so I think the county commissioners and judges, and even some of the district attorneys I talked to, it was much more the fear of the state has not upheld their end on this issue, and we don't want the state public defender coming back. The people that I was surprised at is that there are some public defense attorneys out there, and their position was they weren't excited about Senate Bill 377 because they knew how to put bread on their family's table under the current system. And so I had, you know, part of the advantage of going out to the field is you have opportunities to not just assess and evaluate the system, but to have conversations about different things. And so there's a number of people that we talked to about all of this stuff. And I do think that that's been helpful. I would never go so far as to say, you know, this thing's going to be an easy solve in the end here. But I think people are listening differently. And if we can find some way to get the legislature to really understand the depth of the fear that's out there, And legitimately, I will add that the state hasn't upheld their end on all those stuff. And so I think very much people I met with want to do the right thing, want to advance the right to counsel, want to have state involvement, but you know, it's getting past that hump of the past 30 years or however long it's been, in which the state moves and the legislative moves and the funding moves has deteriorated the right to counsel in your state. And the counties feel like they stepped up and took control of the situation. Maybe they didn't do it, you know, great at first, but they're constantly evolving and constantly doing it. And they feel like they've been beaten up for jumping into that void created by the state. And so I don't have the answer on that yet. I think there's got to be a lot of soul searching and working on that. But that's the crux of it. It's nothing that's terribly surprising in my mind.
John McCormick?
I think, just to piggyback on what David said with the fear of, you know, this having been pushed to the counties, and then you saw again in, I believe it was the, was it the 11th session where, the legislature delegated the responsibility to pay for PSIs and DCFS to the counties. So I think that in recent memory, there was, you know, a function that had been the state, and then when the state ran into fiscal problems, they delegated it to the counties. So that's...
They forced it on the counties.
That's not the only one.
And, right. And there's more than that.
And those are just the two I remember having to do with the judicial system. And also one of the things that I found you run into over there, and I had this conversation with a senator, one of the senators who voted no on 377, is that they can't obligate a future legislature to spend money, which in my estimation is kind of an easy line out because they do that. Any law could theoretically do that, but there's that concern as well.
But you know, my response to that would be, and perhaps, you know, perhaps I'm tilting at windmills here, but I have to think that the Sixth Amendment right to counsel expense is different. And what trumps the, you know, pushing that costs and PSIs, et cetera, off to the counties, is what I believe to be very good law and some significant precedent, both state and federal, that specifically says and holds that Gideon presumes that the states and not their political subdivisions are going to be responsible for that expense. The same is not true for mental health. The same is not true for public safety, you know, whatever you want to talk about. So what we have in a situation like this, and who knows, maybe Amy Rose's lawsuit will bear this kind of fruit. But what I think, and again, this may be just John tilting at windmills, and you guys have heard me do this for 11 years now, because I'm hearing what Judge Young is saying, and I'm hearing what Joni Easley is saying. We're worried about what future legislatures will do. Well, a future legislature cannot legislate unconstitutional laws. And if there's a pronouncement in Amy's lawsuit, or if there's an acknowledgement on the part of our politicians in Nevada that that's the threat, that that's the potential constitutional threat, then I think that's different. I think if we institutionalize a commission that's paid for by the state, and a delivery system to the counties that's amenable to the counties, that's paid for by the state, future legislatures are not going to be able to take the risk to change it because of the obligation under the Sixth Amendment to pay the state pay for that and not political subdivisions. So that would be my response to that concern.
But John, that could be, this is Judge Legelmilch, that could be true. But the fact of the matter is they've done it in the past. They've had the lion's share of the responsibility, and then, you know, the 20% split went up to a 50% split, which went up to a, you know, now who knows, God knows what the state public defender costs.
I think it's 80-20 now, bring that up.
It wasn't only, and I worked a lot on that bill. It wasn't only the money issue, it was also the issue of the delivery of services in relation to that bill itself, and it gave the commission the flexibility to do contract attorneys rather than just straight institutionalized public defenders.
Right.
There was, in the bill itself, there was some leeway for the commission to be able to deliver services in different ways throughout the state. So, you know, in that respect, and I think that was a big thing for many of the judges, more than even the money issue. I think the money issue is more of a politician's issue. It's not the judge's issue so much.
You're right, Judge.
But for the judges, it was, how do we deliver the services appropriately in each of the counties? So and one of the big inclusions in that was the requirement that if they did go to an institutionalized public defender, that the public defender would be required to have an office and attorneys staffing that office in the particular county that they took over.
Right.
So, right. And then it got, you know, there's a whole big, now there was a big discussion in the Right to Counsel Commission about regionalizing it, which they did before, which did not work, and it won't work for delivery of services. It didn't work in the past, and to be honest with you, I don't see it working now.
And Judge, this is John Lambrose. I agree with everything you just said. And frankly, I think the reprinted version of 377 anticipated that problem. And I think that, you know, speaking for myself, and I think that most of the folks that worked on it would agree with me that what we were contemplating was what you have just described, and that is a more flexible model, one that it was not as rigid as institutionalized as what we, you know, when I was in Nevada in the 1980s and I worked with Judge Young at the State Public Defender's Office, not that model, you know, just not that model. That model is not going to work in 2018 in Nevada. I get that. But what I'm saying is, what makes me feel so good about 377 as reprinted, as modified, as amended and helped with you and your colleagues is that it gives that kind of flexibility to the counties, and it's paid for by the state with an oversight commission that is comprised of folks who have a keen interest in not punishing the counties but ensuring that the counties get the kind of indigent defense that they're entitled to, paid for by the state. And to me, that's what, just circling back to my question for David, I don't see how, who can rebut that argument? I mean, I just think that's win-win for the counties that have been having to suffer from, you know, it's like that old line from the movie, you know, I'm sick of it and I'm not gonna take it anymore. You're absolutely right. You went from almost complete state funding to having to carry 84% of the, I think it's 84, and Karen's sitting next to me, it's somewhere in the 80s% funding indigent defense when it's probably unconstitutional. So
anyway. I apologize. I have to go to the bench. So this is Judge Young and Judge Schlegelmilch. I'll give you a call later and catch up on
that. Thank you, Judge. Thank you, Judge Young.
That's a good transition. Karen is sitting between John and me, and David, I wanted to ask you, what the view do you have on the state public defender so far as to Karen's office, as to expansion, more handling appeals, handle post-conviction appeals throughout the state? What do you see about our friend Karen's office?
Well, I think it needs to come under whatever the commission ends up being, and I think it's an option for a delivery model, and it certainly should continue to be the Carson City and the Story County public defender. I also think there's room where, I think this is a little more controversial, but a lot of states have created statewide appellate defenders to handle not just the post-conviction stuff, but the direct appeals as well. If the office took that on as well, it could also be another check that the state has against what's going on at the trial level. There's nothing in sort of standards that say that has to be done that way, But I think there's room for that office to take on other responsibilities. Perhaps that's where a training center could be for other places, although I've also talked about maybe it could be in Clark County. What I can say is whatever training is developed, it really should be thought about as long distance learning, trying to draw people to the training. It's much better to have things that can be, you know, done at people's desks at their own hours and things like that. So there's lots of possibilities, but I don't see anyone in which the people that are working there or the office itself goes away, because I think from what we've gleaned, that the services that are provided to Story County and Carson City are very good. So at the very least, it should continue there. But I think there's potential components to have it grow if there is a commission and have other responsibilities. But I do think it's not going to be a model that's going to work in the vast majority of the rural counties. And so, you know, I said that at the last commission meeting too.
Thank you. Let's move on to the Clark County arraignment process. We got a little note from Franny. Did you want to expand on that, John, as to
No, other than what I told you.
Okay, well, just because summer, it was a problem with Amy and Drew meeting. So they'll take a look at the arraignment court and the 8th Judicial District Court, and at the committee, they're not ready to report back. They've met, but they're not ready to report back to the IDC. We want to observe the court in session and talk with some stakeholders. I think we were able to report to the IDC at the next meeting. So we'll pass this to the next meeting, Jamie, okay. And we'll definitely have Franny give a report with Amy and Drew. Is Hans in the room? I didn't see him.
Yes.
Yeah, Hans, what's doing with caseload standards discussion? David's a little pessimistic on caseload standards, and you're optimistic on caseload standards. Where do we stand on this?
I think one of some of the next challenges, and I think David kind of pointed this out, is kind of coming down to a standard unit of count. And some of the challenges that we do have in the state is we have court reporting in some places, the court appointed counsel reporting in other places. I think that is adding to his concern about how cases are being counted. So I think, you know, when we start looking maybe at the commission being appointed at the state level, I think that's one of the things that they're going to have to address is who reports it, and then making sure that you have those uniform standards. And then you're going to have somebody that can go out and make sure that those standards are being followed. We follow a similar model right now at the district courts, where we go out and make sure that systems that are reporting the USGR statistics are meeting the standards that the Supreme Court set.
Like, any questions, Hans, on the caseload standards? He does a good job. He does a fabulous job on our annual report, and he's the best at this. And maybe if there's an independent incident defense commission, he may have a new job. Hans, working with them to try to get caseload standards set up, so it would be satisfactory to everybody. Next, is there somebody who could give a status update on the ACLU of Nevada as far as the lawsuit?
Yes, this is Holly Walburn, Policy Director of the ACLU of Nevada.
Holly, thank you for being here. What's going on? How are we doing on that? How are you doing on that?
It's going well. Of course, this is Amy's realm, so she just gave me some information to report as far as dates. We're still in the class certification process. Close of class discovery is August 29th, and briefing for class certification will be complete by mid-November. The final date on that is November 14th.
Okay, you'll keep us posted as we meet with the IDC the next number of months. Thank you. On the status update on indigent defense in Clark County, Drew or Phil or Jonelle, anything you guys want to add to this meeting? Anything new that we should know? Any problems? Any successes, failures, whatever?
Well, this is Phil Plum. We've been concentrating pretty heavily on the issue of bail in Clark County and trying to remind the courts that standard bail has applied without Bowman law, and tailoring it to each individual case is not legal. And so that's been our challenge and something we've been working on. We've taken a few writs up to district court, which have been successful, and it is a work in progress.
Has your office been able to make any impact, aside from what Franny and Drew and Amy may be doing with the arraignment process? Has there been any changes since you brought it to everybody's attention? Has anybody tried to modify it, or any good news from that situation?
I've been gone since then, and Judge Gonzalez and I have reached out to one another, and so we'll put that off to the next meeting.
Okay, thank you. Anything else from Clark County as to indigent defense? Moving on to Washoe.
Yes, Jerry.
Yes. Oh, Jeff.
This is Jeff Wells. It's not really under this topic. I'm still thinking about John's topic on 377 and that long debate. And I didn't really want to interrupt it at the time, but I gotta say that the counties from the commissioner, county manager side really do have a legitimate concern about how the state approaches these budgets. And while John is correct, we have the Sixth Amendment, we've got case law, and we might win the case, that doesn't alter the fact that how the legislature regularly moves money. They might fund the commission, they might fund indigent defense, and then they just turn around and take it back from the counties under a different concept. For example, the most recent thing is under family services, and it's a thing called BSD for basic skills training, and I won't give a big debate about it. But as of July 27th, which didn't actually happen because we actually reached the agreement, but they were going to change it, stop paying it by the state, which would have cost our county about $10 million. Now we've delayed that at the moment, but they do budgetary constraints on facilities. So for example, we have Summit View, which is a juvenile facility down here, has room for 96 youth. They, because of budgetary reasons at the state, are only letting 24 youth in there, which means we have youth over 30 backed up in our facilities that we're paying $200+ a day for, because there's no place to move them under the state facility. And so when the rural commissioners, rural county managers tell you that they don't necessarily trust how the legislature is going to respond to this and honor their commitments to add additional money to cover it, it's a legitimate fear, because they might add it there and take it someplace else. And I wanted to make sure that all of the urban folks know that the rural guys are not making it up when they say they have this concern.
Well, I understand it, because I know when we had the Death Penalty Resource Center, which was great when I was practicing law and doing death penalty work, and then the legislature cut the legs out from under it. And it was just, it was horrendous when we didn't have the Resource Center. Michael Pichetta, who's such an expert in death penalty, it really made a difference to those of us in practice. And that was the legislature's call. And to me, that's a Gideon issue. I don't know if it goes to the Constitution or the constitutional status, but to me, it was devastating. So I understand where the rules are, and I want to thank again Dagny and her group, NACO, and our rural people that have worked so hard. John, you've done a great job trying to get everybody to understand, McCormick and Lambros and Jamie. Thank you for what you guys do. So we're going to have to wait to see what happens in 19. We don't even know who the players are going to be in 19 yet, and that makes it tough. So let's move on to Washoe, and I just want to congratulate Jeremy, who's going to be retiring. What's your date, Jeremy, to actually hang it up?
August 31st.
Okay, well,
thank you, Justice.
You've been great, Jeremy, and I know you were applauded at the State Bar Convention in Chicago, and again, this commission cannot thank you enough for what you've done as far as indigent defense in Washoe. It's you've done a fabulous job, and I know that your successor will probably have big shoes to fill, Jeremy, so thank you. And I want to know if you, Mark, or anyone up there want anything you want to add, or Bob Bell, anything you want to say about the indigent defense in Washoe at this point? Floor is open for you.
Thanks, Justice. We're moving along pretty quickly here. We have been working with the county regarding budgetary issues, and Jeremy and I
Actually got good news last week that we're going to be able to add an additional deputy each to handle family court matters, which frees up actually some resources we each need on the criminal side as well. So it allows us to restructure a little bit. And so that's the good news. Otherwise, numbers can be increasing, and we're all dealing with it.
And just this little extra is that we're likely to put the assigned council administrator contract out to bid probably near the end of this year. So we'll have hopefully a new assigned council administrator by then. Also, the Reno Justice Court is impaneling re-impaneling the committee that developed the mandatory status conference system. We did that, it's got to be 10 years or so about. And we're going to reconvene all the members of that committee to see how far we've drifted away from the original concept and if there's a way to better fashion the mandatory status conference to continue to reduce unnecessary jail transports and get cases resolved in a timely fashion. I don't know if you have any comment on that.
Any comment by anybody
else? That's it.
Well, thank you very much, Washoe. You guys do a great job up there as far as I'm concerned. I think you do swell work for indigent defense. And it's tough in an urban county, whether it be Clark or Washoe. I know you guys have problems too, and I appreciate the administrators there as to the support that the county commissions have given to indigent defense in their urban situation in Washoe and in Clark. Karen, it looks like you're going to be alive and well. You still have a job. It looks like you're going to be... there's going to be a state public defender's office. It's going to be more of a local public defender's office, and maybe you'll be doing some appellate work.
Yeah, our office has always wanted to take on the appeals statewide, and I think I could be wrong, but I don't think contract attorneys would mind that terribly, because most of them are trial attorneys and they cover their caseload and they don't really want to sit behind their desk for 8 hours and draft appeals. But we've got attorneys that love doing just that, so we've just never been able to find a mechanism by which to do it. So we're absolutely open to that. I know at one point in time there was a BDR to actually assume the post-conviction in-house instead of just operating as a pass-through budget account, but that died. It was odd because we could do it a lot more cheaply and save the state a lot more money, but it didn't pass. So we're totally open to branching out into post-conviction, and we're actually statutorily mandated to do post-conviction appeals. But nobody's ever enforced that either, so.
But the direct appeals would be a money saver for the counties, and it would be great for the rurals that get some extra dollars, because appeals are expensive, there's no doubt. Whether they be a homicide, a burglary, or a gross misdemeanor, they take their time consuming and expensive. And that would be a break, David Carroll, for the counties. At least it would show that we could switch a little bit of a little more responsibility to the state, because they're the ones who pay the tab for the state public defender.
Justice David emailed me and let me know he had other obligations, so he had to get off the phone.
Oh, John, you'll tell him then. You and Jamie. Let's see.
Well, I have a question.
Sure.
So, and I agree with Karen that if you read the statute, the public defender's office is required to do post-conviction. So the question I have is, if I appoint the state public defender to do post-conviction, would they just hire somebody or would they come in and do it?
We would have to, it would be a whole process of getting more attorneys. If we were to do it in all the rural counties statewide, we couldn't do it as currently populated.
You pay out of your budget to post-conviction relief. In other words, if you submit a bill, you do post-conviction relief appeal. You submit the bill to the state public defender.
Yes. It
comes out of their budget.
Well, no, I appreciate that. I understand that. I we do it all the time. No, what I'm saying is, instead of me appointing private counsel to do the post-conviction, if I directly appoint the state public defender, would they in fact do it?
Well, they'll do it to the point where they can't do it anymore. It's like the special public defender in Clark County. It's the same thing. You can only do so many capital murder cases, or you can only do so much post-conviction relief, and then they have an obligation to tell the appointing judge, hey, we need a break.
And it's only the post-conviction appeals that's mentioned in the statute. And that's more feasible to me, because you could do the appeals from a central office. You don't need to do so much legwork and be actually on site in the county.
But the actual post-conviction, if you do post-conviction in the district court, you guys pay for that too, don't you? Or do you not?
Yeah.
Okay. You pay for all post-conviction?
Yes.
Counties have no responsibility?
None.
Okay.
They send us an order to pay, and we pay it.
Right. I know sometimes it's slow pay, though. At least it used to be when I used to bill it.
Has to cross several desks.
Right, okay. Is there anybody from the Federal Public Defender? Is Megan there? Anybody from the Federal Public Defender as to what's going on? Hearing nothing. Is there any more information on the 8th Judicial District Court homicide case pilot project? I know Eric Johnson is no longer on that team, but Michelle Levitt has been is replacing him, so there'll be still four judges doing the majority of homicide cases. They're doing a great job. The only problem is it seems like there's a murder every day in Clark County. At least that's what I read in the Review Journal.
You're right.
Yeah, it looks tough.
Been a busy summer.
Jonelle, can you comment on that, or Phil?
Sure. We're having a meeting at the end of August with representatives from everyone involved to further assess refinements. But for the most part, I think it's working pretty well. I don't know the numbers. Mr. Lawley tends to keep that information really well. For the most part, at least the special public defender attorneys are happy with it. I think the DAs are pretty happy. And we're just still working on fine tuning.
How's it affecting caseloads? I'm talking about not the project, but the number of homicides that are being charged. I mean, what's happening with the murder teams as far as the defense position?
Well, look, I mean, this is Phil Cohn.
Yes.
There's been an incredible amount of death penalty filings in the last 2 years. Last year there was 17. I suspect we will get around that number again. When I heard last week, we were at 61 death penalty cases in Clark County. So we're inching up towards that area where poor Mr. Wilson took over. So, I mean, it's troubling to me, but that's where we are.
And I agree with that completely. The numbers are incredibly out of proportion compared to anywhere else in the country. Whether the jurisdiction our size, higher than Maricopa County, higher than Riverside County, higher than any of the Bible Belt, it's pretty insane. And if it were a proportionate number, we would have a much easier time resolving other cases. The death cases are pretty overwhelming.
Is either office in a position to tell the judges that we can't take any more capital murder cases?
We stopped taking capital murder cases a few months ago. I can't remember the exact date, but we haven't been able. My office is at 18 right now. And we'll be resolving a few of those soon, and we'll start picking up one or two again. But we haven't taken them for a few months.
Just note that in 1997, when I was the first special public defender, there were seven of us. Oh my God. Drew, what's happening with the
Just before we leave that, this is John. Phil and Jonelle, I'm interested in, is there anything left of the model that was implanted several years back whereby, kind of like it was kind of like the federal system, whereby defense counsel was given an opportunity before the district attorney's office filed death to talk to the district attorney's office about why this was not a capital case? And if there is it meaningful, or does Wolfson's office just make that decision without any opportunity to get some input from you guys?
Well, they get input from us, John, but then they make the decision, and they've been making a decision to go death a lot in the last year.
But is there a process, Phil? I mean, you know, in the feds, they can't go death until they've given defense counsel an opportunity to go to D.C. to set out the parameters of why this is not a death case. I just don't know if that process is still exists, and if it does, if it's meaningful, and if you guys have had any success in getting the DA's office not to file death, because, you know, I'm shocked that there are 17 capital cases. I mean, I know there's a lot of murder in Clark County, but 17 capital cases in Clark County, given what Jonelle just said?
In her office.
That's just one of us.
Well, no. I thought 61
cases countywide.
No, I thought what I heard you say, that beginning on January 1st of 18, there were 17 new cases that were filed.
No, that was in calendar year 17.
Okay. All right. So, I mean,
that's right back up into David Roger territory.
I was just going to say that's above and beyond what David's office was filed, isn't it?
That's what he was averaging.
All right. I'm sure that must be a lot of fun for you, Jeff, in terms of finding the money for that.
Well, I was going to ask Drew to comment on that as to, does he have sufficient attorneys that are 250 qualified to handle these cases?
Actually, Drew's taken a few days off, so okay. He's not here.
Well, Jeff, you comment on it, since you're the guy with the checkbook.
The short answer is we do have enough contract attorneys that are 250 qualified. We need to increase the staff in both of the other offices, PD and SPD, to get a couple more 250 qualified over there. And from a budgetary point of view, when you were saying, John, earlier that the counties are picking up like 80%, I think you're just looking at the rural numbers. I think if we throw in Clark County's numbers, the counties are probably picking up 95% of the total budget for you.
No question.
Dagny had something to say.
Well, I can just clarify on that. It's in all but two counties, it's 100% that the counties pay for. Because the state public defender only serves two counties now, and I believe in those counties it's 85%.
It's about 76-24.
Okay, 76-24. And the remainder of the counties is 100%.
Yeah, those facts came out of the Right to Counsel Legislative Commission, too.
Good point, Jeff.
All right, I think we've reached the... Is there any public comment? Any other business or public comment? Hearing none, I want to thank everybody. We'll be in touch. We'll probably have a meeting maybe in August, but definitely in September if we don't do August. And the IDC is alive and well, and you're all invited to the Right to Counsel Legislative Commission meeting tomorrow via either the Legislative Building in Carson or the Grant Sawyer Building in Las Vegas. So this meeting stands adjourned. I want to thank everybody for participating today. We're adjourned.
Were we going to talk?